You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. The views and opinions of our hosts and our guests are not the opinions of KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or anyone else. They are just the normal interactions between our guests. You're listening to 90.1 KKFI, and this is Cowtown Conversations. And today, our guest is from the Center for Conflict Resolution, Ms. Jackie Burns. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and the Center for Conflict Resolution?
Jackie Bikes, and I am with the Center for Conflict Resolution. We are located at 1734 East 63rd Street, Suite 305, Kansas City, Missouri. Please check out our website, www.ccrkc.org. We are a non-for-profit organization. We do a lot of restorative justice programming and training in the Kansas City area and Kansas City, Kansas, all over actually, but in Missouri and Kansas right now.
So how does one get to be a person who works at the Center for Conflict Resolution? What led you to that path?
Wow, that's a great question. I, for years, been an entrepreneur, still doing some, it's hard to get that out of my blood, so I'm still doing little side gigs, but I had a bakery along with my sisters for about 10 years, and once we dissolved the bakery and decided to, you know, go our different ways and do something a little different, I really enjoy outreach. I enjoy helping people learn what their purpose is in life. So when I had the opportunity to go to a networking, I had the privilege of meeting Annette Lance Simmons and Debbie at their booth, and they were sharing with me all the things that they do in restorative justice and working with people in prison and working with neighborhoods and helping people become accountable for what they do instead of using more criminal justice processes. So it just really perked my interest, and I said, this is what I want to do. And so it took about 6 months because, as I said, we're non-for-profit. So the funds were not there to bring on another person just yet. So finally, when that time came, and I pursued them and sent my resume and said, hey, I'm interested whenever you're ready to fill a position. And they gave me a call. And so it's been about 2 years now that I have been there and loving every moment of it, because I feel like we are making a positive change. It's pretty grassroots, because restorative justice is just not the common dialogue that we have on a regular basis. So, but it's exciting because I'm used to being an entrepreneur and starting a business. So this is what that feels like to me.
So the Center for Conflict Resolution mission is to prevent, educate, and restore. How do you all work to prevent violence and other conflicts in our city and in our neighborhoods?
Well, one of the things that we do is we educate people. We let them know that conflict is inevitable. Conflict is around us all the time. It's just a matter of being equipped with the tools and processes in order to squash it without violence. So some of the things that we've been doing is working in the school district, working in schools, getting to our young people now, and even working towards getting into the grade schools. Right now we've been in middle schools and high schools and doing conflict resolution classes there. So, yeah, teaching them how to use empathy, how to understand everyone has their own perspective. Most times that's how arguments and fights start, because you don't see things the way I see it, or you're trying to make me see things the way I see it. So, yeah, we talk about things like that, and it's really been astonishing, the awareness that's coming about with the students, and just seeing them blossom before our eyes as we go through a 6-week process and once a week, usually for 6 weeks in the school, working with a particular grade level at a time, with the whole classroom process. So, yeah, it's been awesome.
So, as you said, it's not the mainstream idea of restorative justice in the education. Have people been really receptive to the principles of restorative justice and working through conflict, instead of people's normal tendency is to, well, you hit me, I'm going to hit you back. Mm-hmm. You push me, I'm going to push you back. Mm-hmm. Violence begins violence. Mm-hmm. So how difficult has it been to get people to latch on to this new concept?
It has been not quite as challenging as one might think. It's just a matter of getting the word out and sharing with people, you know, how wonderful this process is. If we have just 15 or 20 minutes with you, we can share that with you. And we're one of the a gauge, I guess, I would use right now to show that it is catching on is, right now, as I speak, we're doing a training at our office with people from all over the area who have signed up for restorative justice and mediation classes. And that's a week-long, 40-hour week session where they're, you know, lining up and calling us, different teachers. We've got teachers, lawyers, housewives, people from all walks of life, very diverse, that are very interested in the process and how can they take this back to where they are. Because we can use this in our own homes. It's helped me tremendously just in marriage and with my children and all of that. It's applicable in every area of our lives. So, and it's basically, when we look at the criminal justice system, it's all about what rule was broken, who is to blame, and what is the punishment. Whereas with restorative justice approach, is more of what happened, who has been impacted, and how can we tend to the relationship. So it's all about that relationship process. And then what have we all learned that will help us make a difference and making healthier choices in the future. So it's not about pointing a finger and blaming, but it's equipping people. So a lot of times with students, it's like, instead of them feeling like, oh, darn, I'm sorry I got caught, it's more so, you know what, I'm going to let you know what I did, and I apologize genuinely because I didn't really mean to do that. And just getting to the core of the issue. So, yeah, even when it comes to the way we discipline students in school, we're doing restorative discipline training with the teachers and the whole staff at the schools. We're talking from the security to the cafeteria, anyone that comes in contact with a student, because we need to all be speaking the same language when it comes to restorative justice and not being punitive. And the punitive concept has been embedded in us from birth. So it takes a minute to change. Could you imagine you've been doing this all your life, and now all of a sudden someone comes in and says, this is the new way we need to do it. So we understand that it is a process, but we're just very excited that people are, their eyes are open to it and their ears are ready to hear how we can make this happen.
So we're now trying to turn around and reteach and reeducate mm-hmm. from a process that we've been from the crib. You know, somebody hit you, somebody kicked you, you want to assess blame, and you want to be judge, jury, and issue out that punishment at the same time. So now we're getting people to understand or to look at thinking that, yes, I was wronged, but talking it out mm-hmm. instead of acting it out.
Right, right. That has really been quite a transition in the schools. Actually, anywhere, because the way I was raised, it was, you know, if your sister gets into a fight, you need to stay there and fight too. Or if your cousins get into a fight. So it's like now changing that mindset, that shift that needs to take place. And so going over really concrete steps that work when we're training people. So we're not saying, hey, just say no. We're saying, okay, you know, when you use these skills that we're sharing with you, that it's not necessarily an overnight fix, but it is something that you can use, and it actually works. And so we practice, we do role plays when we're doing the trainings to just try to get it implemented into our psyche, because again, when it comes to this punitive approach, it basically came from the prison system, and so the schools are pretty much had for years taken on that same concept. One of the things that I really like about the restorative process is that typically when someone harms you, let's say you've been violated, there's been a crime against you. When you go to court, you don't get to talk to the person that that perpetrated the harm. You have lawyers that speak for you. You have no say-so in it at all. The jury makes the decision or the judge makes the decision. Whereas with the restorative process, it is very important that the perpetrator of the crime and the person that's been harmed are able to come together and come together with the community, people that represent the community, or come together in mediation. However, it's all based upon the person that's been harmed. It's all voluntary. So it's up to that person, and then it's all driven by them. So if they're willing to do that process, it is amazing how it works. We've been doing it in the schools when instead of students getting suspended, they say they've set up mediation processes in the school. So, for example, Northeast Middle School, we've been there for probably the last 3 or 4 years. And once a week we're there, and we'll do mediations with students that may have had some type of a conflict that has gone a little bit too far, so that it's disrupting class time. So it may not even be a physical fight, but it could be a verbal altercation. So we will come and we will do the mediation with those students. They're able to sit together, and then there's usually two mediators. And we don't tell them what to do. We allow them to come up with their own way of handling it and holding them accountable for it. So that's the other thing. When you come up with the way you want to handle it, more than likely you're going to follow through with it. So out of all the students that we've been able to do this mediation with and the schools, we are so impressed with their behavior. Afterward, they actually even sign an agreement. Once they agree upon what they want to do, and then we write it up, we review it with them, and we write it up exactly as they say. So one example might be, when you see me in the hallway, don't speak to me and I won't speak to you. That is absolutely fine. And it's not about, oh, we want you to be friends. It's all about what is going to work in that environment for you to be able to accomplish what you're in school for, and to not be distracted by conflicts that are going to occur and how you're going to deal with it. And then sometimes we have students that are saying, you know what, I apologize. We don't say you need to apologize. It's totally up to them. They'll apologize and work things out on their own. So it's really been wonderful to see and to be a part of it.
So it's about those two people that were in that altercation finding a way to work together for the best solution that will work for the both of them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, they discuss it. We typically, in the schools, we may take up to an hour for that process, but a regular mediation outside of the classrooms can take at the max 2 hours is what we give. But sometimes it's been mediations where it's been one of them, it was like 5 students and all their parents. So that particular mediation process took about 4 hours because we have to do an interview with each person first to find out what their perspective was and take notes. And then after that, we bring them all together and go through the process of the mediation. So, yeah, it's been great.
One of the things that's come out of restorative justice is that if a young person is to go into a store, and I know Walmart's bought into this theory, mm-hmm. some of the neighborhood stores, that instead of them calling the police on that individual and giving them a record, they're given a chance to be able to sit down with a representative from that company mm-hmm. and to work through it. How has that worked?
That has really been a an impactful process. That is called our accountability boards, neighborhood accountability boards. We also have neighborhood codes accountability boards. They are both the same, except for one is based upon codes violations, and the other one is, like you were saying, if someone is caught committing a crime, and maybe this is the first time they've ever done something like that, or the prosecutor has partnered with the Center for Conflict Resolution for this process to take place. And so what we'll do is what you just mentioned, we will have a representative from the store or from wherever the incident happened. Then we will have people from the community that have gone through our what we call Neighborhood Accountability Board training, or for short as NABs. They've gone through the trainings, and that training, we do those on a regular basis, and those trainings are about 8 hours. But yeah, they go through that, and we come to we meet at either the library or in our office or community room at the police department, and we have these this process that'll take place. Neighborhood churches let us use their rooms, and again, we're not there to judge that person. We're not there to put them down. We are there to listen to what happened from both sides of the story, and then the person that perpetrated the harm comes up with their way of restoring what they did, how they're going to fix this process. For example, one student, young man that this happened to, he was very good in math, and he was a cop for stealing something at Walmart. And so his way of paying back, because it affects the whole community, that's one of the things that each of the people on the board, they'll share, you know, with them, how it impacted the community, how it impacted your neighborhood, how it impacted your family. What are your thoughts on that? And then they share with us that, you know what, I never even thought of it like that. I just needed something at the time, and that's why I took it. So this gentleman was very remorseful, as most of them are, and sorry for what he did. And as I said, he was very good in math. And when he came up with a way of restoring what he had done, he stated that he would like to tutor young people in math. And so we said, well, your maximum hours for doing that would be at least 4 hours. He said, I want to do at least 12. And so and when people come up with their own way of handling it, they carry it out. They finish it. And we follow up with them. We make sure that they finish. They have to report to us once they've completed it. There's signed paperwork that's done. So, yeah, and we report back to the prosecutor's office, and all charges are dropped. So it is I really like it that the city of Kansas City, that they're doing things like this.
So it's a forward-thinking process that instead of an individual ending up with a conviction on their record that will follow them for the rest of their life,
right.
They're able to sit down with the company mm-hmm. or, the individual that was involved in that and be able to come up with a situation that works for both parties.
Yeah.
But where they don't end up with a record after that.
Yeah.
Which would affect their ability to be able to get federal financial aid,
mm-hmm.
go on to college,
yeah.
and complete their life. So it gives a new meaning to the term that, you know, it's not just a one mistake anymore, and that everybody gets a second chance.
Yeah. We really like that. There's so many people that are actually in jail and prison right now that probably could go through this process and be great assets to the community, because we're all needed. And if they're able to work it out with the person that they've harmed. I'm not saying every case is that way. There are some situations where the punitive process is needed. However, the majority of them could be worked out through a restorative justice process.
How does that work in a case of a codes where a senior citizen may have their house may need to be painted, or they may have some rank high weeds or grass?
Mm-hmm.
How does that neighborhood assistance board help that person who has a code violation?
Yeah, we have a partnership with the city of Kansas City, with the codes department, and they reached out to us and we partnered, and I thought that that was very progressive of them as well. What will happen is, the same as the Neighborhood Accountability Board, when someone has been charged with a small crime, the same goes with someone that has gotten a code violation. So let's say, the example that you shared with a senior citizen whose home needs painting, what we'll do is, instead of the codes department finding that person, they'll refer them to us first, and then we'll contact them and say, you know, you've been referred to us, or they'll either call us and say, we need to set up a neighborhood accountability board to work together on how we're going to get your codes violation repaired. And they really like that. We had one where the gentleman had lived in his neighborhood for about 40 years. And so the neighborhood association president invited him to a neighborhood codes accountability board to do some repair work on his home. And he went and knocked on his neighbor's door and invited him. And he said, first of all, out of all the years he's lived there, no one's ever come to his house and knocked on his door and asked him, how can we help you correct your codes violation? We'd like to invite you to a meeting so that we can actually discuss that. And so he came, he shared that. We had people from that community that were represented on that neighborhood accountability board that said to him, asked him questions. We allowed him to talk. He said he was disabled. You know, he had some, he went through a few struggles, and so he's now ready to get it done, but he just didn't have the finances for it. So there's so many programs that the city has. Some neighborhood associations have different programs that they offer that some people just don't know about. There's a paint program with the city, a free paint program that most people can qualify for. So, and the other thing that a lot of neighborhood associations might have is what we call a tool library, where you may not have the particular tools to do the work. Well, you can rent these particular tools. There's some neighborhood associations that have lawnmowers that you can check out like a library for free to get your work done on your home. So when we did that neighborhood accountability board with that gentleman, he was so happy because everyone there, the majority were his neighbors, and they said, how can we help you? And so there was a group in that particular neighborhood that was doing repair work on homes and allowing you to pay just the cost of what it would for the supplies and not for labor. So they said you can pay back whatever is comfortable for you per month. And they worked out a plan with him, and he was able to get his work done on his home, and the fines were dropped once he completed the work. And then the city dropped the fines.
So is this a program that works Kansas City-wide, or is it just in certain neighborhoods at this point?
Right now it's Kansas City-wide through the City of Kansas City Codes Department. Yeah.
Programs like yours don't work without dedicated staff and the community coming together, but you also need volunteers. How can people work with the Center for Conflict Resolution to help you all complete your mission?
Yeah, we are so grateful for our volunteers, for our staff. We are a lean, mean operating machine. We wear many hats in our office. And so the staff, we may have about maybe 10 And the majority of us are not full-time. So our volunteers are truly a blessing. We have people that come and maybe volunteer one day a week. We have people that may have chosen to volunteer at our place to as in a process of restoring some harm that they may have perpetrated, and they come and they work in our office. We have people that are retired that come and they help, and they help us with mediations, they help us in the schools. So we're always looking for more volunteers. So if you are interested, please give us a call. At our office number is 816-461-8255. 461-8255, and anyone there should be able to help you. So, yeah, please give us a call.
Do you all have a website where people can come and find out more information about the Center for Conflict Resolution and the great work that you're doing?
Oh, thank you. Yes, we do. It's ccrkc.org, www.ccrkc.org. And we have lots of testimonials out there, lots of other things that we're doing. As I said, we're in the schools. We go into the prisons. We help people that are getting ready to be released to be restored back into the community, and showing them, teaching them conflict resolution skills, preparing them. So that can go on for about 6 to 12 week process. We also work in the neighborhoods, as we just talked about there. We do mediations throughout the community. We have landlord-tenant mediations that we do. People will call in. The city refers them to us as well. Sometimes people have a dispute that could be easily handled with us being a third party, neutral party. And we do what we also call restorative circles. The circle process is really catching on very well. So, yeah.
Well, we'd like to thank our guests this week from the Center for Conflict Resolution, Ms. Jackie Burns. And we never end Cowtown Conversation without our Community Minute. Tonight, the Kansas City, Missouri Board of Police Commissioners will host a public forum from 6 to 8 p.m. with two finalists for police chief candidates will answer questions from the public. This session will take place at the community room of the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department headquarters, 1125 Locust Street. The SWOP Health Community Center will have a back-to-school fair. It's getting back to that time, Saturday, July the 29th at 3801 Blue Parkway, Kansas City, Missouri. The health fair will be a one-stop shop for health screenings for children, including immunizations, so don't wait till the last minute. Get the immunizations now. And they will give out backpacks. Parents, children must be there to receive that. They're also going to have bicycle helmets for children, free while supplies last. So, again, children must be present. It's going to be Saturday, the 29th, from 9 to 1 a.m. at the Swope Parkway Health Community Services location here in Kansas City, 3801 Blue Parkway. The NAACP, in partnership with Alpha Kappa Alpha, will be hosting a voter information forum on the new Missouri ID photo law and how it will affect you on Sunday, July 29th at the Bruce Watkins Cultural Center, 3700 Blue Parkway. Our next election is going to be August 8th, so this is information that people really need to know, that now you have to have a photo ID in order to actually vote, or one other form of ID. And we know crime in our city is at an all-time high, but next week, Vineyard Neighborhood Association is going to be having their Night Out Against Crime. It's going to be August the 1st at 5 p.m. at their Vineyard location, 4301 East 43rd Street. They're going to have community outreach programs aimed at reducing crime. There will be food, and attendees can expect to see guest speakers, police display vehicles, and there will also be a precision drill team. So we're asking people to come out, but also on that night, turn on your porch light as a show of solidarity against crime. For more information, contact Night Out Against Crime. So there's going to be a lot of different things going on in Kansas City, but we also have to begin to work together. So for KKFI, this is Joseph Jackson with Cowtown Conversations. I'm hoping you tune in next week when our guests will be people with the National Association Corporation of America, NACA, where they help homeowners get loans without using your credit.
we have extreme economic inequality in the richest country in the world? This week on the Heartland